you know, Doctor Who is in everyone's life. And for me, it was Saturday night and fish and chips. And I don't get the fish and chips nowadays, but it's really special to do Doctor Who and to play a complex character, a psychotic dancing spider. It's a real challenge.
I'm Maureen O'Brien and I play CeeLo. We've had a glorious day. Much laughter, much reminiscing, much everything. It's been really great.
I'm rather keen that word of this shouldn't get out.
Are you?
So, I rather think we should draw this interview and your life to a close.
All right, men with guns. Do you have any idea how predictable that is?
Well, who needs anything fancy?
CeeLo. I sort of see her as a kind of Bill Nighy, but wicked and very powerful. And, yeah, if Bill Nighy was playing a really top financier who'd come from the bottom up, you know, by their own bootstrings. I've tried to do it like Bill.
I think, you know, we knew we wanted to use Maureen for CeeLo because obviously she's known to us as Vicky, but she's such a brilliant actress, and we knew that she had the versatility to do that CeeLo. And first Gyra, and her first Gyra is the spider chorus girl, is highly entertaining. And I think Maureen has really enjoyed playing some different characters today.
Pass me the blusher.
Yeah. That sort have no idea that we're artists. Half of them are just staring at my legs.
Oh. Which?
Oh, 5, 6 and 7.
Oh, well, they are your best ones.
Little Gyra? I've done her as, well, she's just a little dancer and takes her art very seriously, but very sweet and sympathetic. The opposite of CeeLo.
It's been delightful to see Chris and Maureen together. There's something very sentimental about seeing the Doctor's companion with the 9th incarnation of the Doctor, and to see these actors greeting each other and kind of catching up on their respective histories, and there's just something very romantic about that. And I think they were both delighted to be working together.
He's absolutely lovely and wonderful as well. I think you feel that he's very exigent. He has really high standards for the script and for a kind of honesty in his work and depth and truth. It's a respect, real respect I have for him. For me, he is the most convincing successor to William Hartnell because he has a quality of danger, real danger. A guy who, if you get on the wrong side of him, could really allow his rage to run away with him, but he keeps it in check. And I think for kids, that's really important, you know. We'll follow this guy, we'll go with this guy. And he's also a man with a man on a quest, a man with a purpose, a man with a passion. And I think all those things could have come directly from Bill. And since he's supposed to be an embodiment of Bill, since they all are, I think he's a really serious contender.
She has a very magical quality to her. And she told me some really interesting things about her being in script meetings in 1965 as a very young, and of course, a very young woman, and objecting to irregularities in the presentation of her character. And she said that the original Doctor, the great William Hartnell, backed her up, which was important for me to hear, really, that he'd stood four square behind her. And I was just trying to imagine what it must have been like for a young woman on what was probably a very, very male show in 1965, saying, no, I'm not doing this. This is inconsistent. And she said she was doing a thing that I felt very strongly when we made this, was respecting the intelligence of the children, which is, I have two children. I watch a lot of television with them. Nothing escapes them. Stuff that escapes adults does not escape children. And she was forever saying, no, the kids have just seen me like this. They won't accept that I'm suddenly like that. I thought that was very interesting to hear her tales.
The actors were always at the script meetings, which I realise now was probably rather unusual and down to Verity, I guess. I felt I was fighting on the side of the kids, you know, who were the audience, the intended audience, and I wanted them to take it seriously and not leave me weeping at the end of one episode because the only person I know in the whole world has gone off, flying off in the TARDIS, and I'm left alone in medieval England. And then the next week, I'm wandering around a medieval castle saying, ooh, isn't it interesting? Isn't it lovely? I thought, no, no, I used to say the kids are not stupid. They'll wonder what sort of person I am, that, you know, that kind of thing. And Bill, I think, generally backed me up. I mean, I don't really, yeah, generally backed me up, I would think. The writers certainly liked it. But on the whole, I was kind of patted on the head by people, you know. But I think the writers didn't mind.
I have armed men stationed on stage 3.
You sent them to kill us? Doctor, she sent people to kill us.
That was before we were all on the same side. You've got to be more adaptable.
I mean, I've done some funny scripts in my time, but this is the best. This is funnier than anything I've ever done before in my life, I think. It's just wonderful. The characters are extraordinary. The ideas are extraordinary. The language is extraordinary. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I knew it was funny when I first read it, but acting it is, you know, and hearing what the other actors are doing with it, I mean, it's just a gift.
Two things I noticed about this, really, was the Doctor's hard centre. He completely understands the creature's desire for revenge, and that line he says, I don't judge and I don't condemn. To revisit that slightly brutal side of the Doctor and his anger at the three antagonists was interesting to touch upon. And then at the end, his plea, well, it wasn't really a plea, but is an embarrassing assumption that Nell wanted to travel with him, struck me as an insight into his loneliness, actually.
What are you going to do now?
Good question. I really ought to have a plan. But why change the habit of so many lifetimes?
I think having identical twin brothers who were 8 years older than me, oddly, I felt a loneliness. I think I did probably think, well, where's my twin? And because there was that gap, I suppose in a way I was a bit like an only child, which was the making of me, because it made me quite self-reliant, it made me quite competitive, and it also made me quite imaginative. I probably imagined that twin to play with. So consequently, I was forever in the garden or my bedroom, imagining scenarios and playing characters. So the loneliness, I think, was the first thing that I hooked into. I've said that before in interviews about thinking of him as a, you know, he's a time traveller, he's falling through time, he's alone. I remember thinking, oh, I could bring that quality to him. And he addresses that in this episode, actually.
My name is Tim Foley, and I'm the writer of the Ninth Doctor story, Break the Ice. It's Doctor Who at Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Hang on, tree on the desk. Stocking on the pod. Is it that time of year already?
What is going on?
Merry Christmas. I'm the Doctor. And let's find out.
I actually think this one's getting a summer release, but we can pretend and listen to it again in 6 months' time, can't we? I love this time of year. And I know the Ninth Doctor has flirted with this period before. Obviously, we had The Unquiet Dead on TV, one of my favourites. And there were the mildest Christmas sprinklings in my first story I wrote for Christopher Eccleston, Fright Motif. But for this story, I really wanted to write a big old juicy Christmas special. The Christmas special that Christopher Eccleston never got on TV. The Doctor Who Christmas specials were always a huge part of my festive period. You know, we would all sit around the telly and watch it because I would force my family to join me. But I had friends who weren't Doctor Who fans who would sit down and watch it as well, and their families would watch it as well. And it was just this great big unifying thing that was on telly at the time. And that's largely to do with the kind of stories that were being told. They're big, they're fun, they're colourful, they're relentless. And I really wanted to channel that kind of bombastic energy into Break the Ice.
Hi, I'm Helen Goldwyn, and I am the director of Break the Ice. This is one with a sort of mixture of Christmas and horror. There's something very blended there, and obviously there are fairy tale influences around this mythology of Jack Frost. But it's set on a space station, of course. Why wouldn't it be?
I nearly didn't make it up here, you know. Failed the flight test 7 times. 7 times. It's just the idea of being out in space, the open void, is utterly paralyzing.
Yet here you are. You say it holds you back, but you're the furthest from home than any other human being right now. And you want to go further, don't you?